You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 483.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Station. I hope this summer weather is treating you well and you are getting out to enjoy the great outdoors, finding some peace and relaxation along the way. For those of you tempted to try wild camping as a cheap way to achieve said peace, you might be interested in a recording of a recent live stream Andy Hall and I did on the topic, which is now live on YouTube and theoutdoorstation.co.uk. We look at how to approach it, hints and tips, and potentially where to go to get the most pleasure from wild camping in the UK. Although peace and relaxation is something we all yearn for, many of us, myself included, suffer occasionally from aches and pains in our back, hips, legs and feet, which can sometimes take the pleasure out of walking, hiking and camping, no matter where you go. These aches and pains sometimes are during a hike and occasionally prior to setting off, as your body shifts from behind the desk and begins to move in a whole new way. Many of us hit the gym or increase general exercise as a way of combating hill fatigue and injury. However, did you know there are a handful of specialists around the world who, thanks to technology, can offer a personalized service to help you achieve your specific outdoors adventure goal? Rowan Smith from Summit Strength in Sydney, Australia, is certainly a personal trainer with a difference, with clients of all ages. As always, all the contact details, further information and images can be found over on theoutdoorstation.co.uk.
When I first got started in the training game for the adventure community, I first started working with mainly with trekkers and beginner trekkers and beginner mountaineers who were coming to see me to prepare for things like Everest Base Camp, Kilimanjaro, Machu Picchu, the Kokoda Trail, all these quite big adventures. And, you know, these bucket list adventures have been sitting on their list for years and years and years. And they were coming to see me and just wanting help physically preparing for those things because they're, you know, obviously a very big challenge. It's a bit of a step up beyond from your normal weekend warrior of going out and hiking or having a sport or something like that. And particularly in Sydney, where I'm based, and in Australia, there isn't really any major mountains to train on, and there's particularly no altitude to train on. So the closest we have is the Blue Mountains, which is a couple of hours away, which, you know, it does have a little bit of elevation, but it's nothing really. There's no mountains to speak of, and Australia is generally a pretty flat country. So I had lots of people coming to see me because they just needed help preparing for this stuff, and they didn't really know what they needed to be doing. So seeing that was my sort of area of expertise, but physically preparing people for exactly that, they were coming to see me. But as I sort of got into that process and sort of really realized I enjoyed and loved working with these guys and helping them and seeing their successes and really getting some satisfaction out of that, as I sort of started to go into that a little bit more, as opposed to part-time where I worked with a lot of other populations and really going to full-time around the adventure community, I had a bit of a roll-on effect in the sense that it wasn't so much 100% of these people doing these major adventures, but quite often I was getting people who were just doing their local day hiking or, you know, doing a multi-day treks and hikes in their home country, nothing too major, but they really enjoyed that as their passion. And they'll come in to see me or talking to me online about just being able to enjoy themselves a little bit more, in the sense that a lot of people deal with aches and pains and injuries which just go on and on and on. And you might be able to ignore them when you're young, but as it comes over the years, it starts to really suck a bit of enjoyment away from, you know, what's for many people their main passion in life, or at least one of their main passions in life. So I've had lately a bit of a roll-on effect of a lot more people of the everyday hikers coming to see me and just wanting a little bit of help, realizing their body just needs extra help to prepare and to get through these adventures day to day.
Do they sort of start working out at a gym and then realize it's the wrong type of exercise for them?
Yeah, I get two different ends of the spectrum there. So I either get the people who are currently working at a gym and they've, you know, done that on and off for, you know, quite a while, but they're doing just general exercise. So whether it's just general exercise classes in the gym, whether it's going on a treadmill and just running away, Over here at the moment, I'm not sure about over your side of the world, but the higher intensity training is becoming really, really popular. Mm. And a lot of people are just jumping into these very, very generic classes, which are great for sort of weight loss and they're great for general fitness. But, you know, hiking and trekking is a very, very specific demands of that. And they were sort of, a lot of people come in and see me realize what they're doing isn't actually helping them in the sense on the trail. It's not alleviating their aches and the pains. It's not really getting them, you know, physically fit to tackle any major elevation. It's not really getting them ready to go for hours and hours and days on an end. So quite a few people coming out of that sense. And on the other side of things, I get quite a few people, probably it's about 50-50 split of just hikers who've completely avoided the gym or completely avoided other training, and their pure physical exercise is just walking and hiking. They love that. They enjoy that. And they may even have chosen that as a way to get out of the gym and ignore that environment because, you know, a lot of people don't really enjoy that stuff. But then, yeah, I'm getting a lot of people, again, as I said previously, they're just realizing, look, my body's not holding up quite as well as it should be, or I've got this significant challenge ahead which I'm aiming for and I just need a little bit extra help. So I get about 50-50 split between those two populations.
So tell me about the general effect of hiking and trekking on the average body. What impact does it have on the general frame of a person's body?
Yeah, well, many, many people underestimate these things in the sense that they go into, you know, going for a hike or going for a trek and they just think, hey, it's just walking. How hard can it be? And many, many people can get away with that mentality and they might turn up to a hike every couple of weeks or they might turn up to a major trek. And they've just done a little bit of walking here and there, and then they can just push themselves through mainly mentally and just, you know, get through the fatigue. And that does happen for quite a few people. But for probably the majority of the population, it is a little bit more impactful than you would first think. So things like, you know, foot pain and shin splints and knee pain and even lower back pain is really, really, really common in the hiking world. And it's just something that tends to be, everyone knows it's there, but everyone just ignores it. Because for the fact that we're walking for, you know, 2, 3, 4, up to 10 hours, whatever, depending on what you're going to be doing. Even if it is relatively low impact and you are just walking, the body does get tired, the supporting muscles get tired, and then the joints start to get a little bit ground up and they just take a little bit of extra pressure. I think there's an interesting number is when you're walking downhill and the descents, and so many people suffer from, you know, knee pain on descents, and I think the knee can take up to 6 times more force than when you're walking on the flat. And so you might think, hey, it's just walking, but actually your joints do take a reasonable amount of pressure. And that can either go one or two ways, depending on which joint you're talking about. But if some people will be thrive under that pressure and the joints will take a little bit of force and it'll be like, sweet, I need to get a little bit stronger to support that. And some people will be perfectly fine and they can just hike and hike and hike and there's no real issues. But there's a big portion of the people who their joints won't be able to take that pressure and it might just be a little too much, a little too soon. And instead of getting stronger, it just gets painful and it gets weaker and it just goes down and it spirals in the other direction. So it's tends to sneak up on you, these things. And a lot of people underestimate the whole hiking world and the trekking world. But for any lifelong hiker out there, they know it's not quite as simple as it first sounds and they know those aches and pains are there. And unfortunately, a lot of people just don't do anything to help deal with it, in all honesty.
And I guess probably a lot of your clients that are doing this big sort of 40th or 50th challenge or celebration or whatever have probably never had to carry a rucksack as well. So that must add to the problems.
Absolutely. For every kilo you carry on your back or even in your body weight, and if you haven't been exercising for a while and you put on a few extra kilos, your like lower limbs take a hugely disproportionate amount of extra force. So if you're throwing on 10 kilos, 15 kilos, 20 kilos on your back for the first time, and you're trying to walk for hours and hours, your body's taking a huge amount of pressure there. And again, a lot of people just underestimate it and they might think, hey, I did it 20 years ago, I did it 30 years ago, no issues. You know, it's not that hard and they've got great memories. But, you know, when you're going for those, you know, the age is creeping up to the middle age and that, and the body just can't, most people's bodies can't handle that stuff as well as it used to. So it just needs a little bit more thought around it.
Actually, I notice around here in the UK, certainly, and you may find it the same in Sydney, that the younger generation, I used to walk to school and carry a heavy bag of books, etc., but nowadays they seem to be dropped off outside the door. They actually don't seem to have much physical activity where they're carrying any weight.
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely, 100%. you know, there's the whole laptop revolution. I'm sure that adds to it, because I remember lugging around so many textbooks and so many different books every day. And, you know, that was getting up quite a few kilos and walking a few kilometers to school every day. And I know, yeah, 100% people's just everyday activity when we're a bit younger has just gone down for a whole bunch of different reasons. And I'm sure in the next 10, 15 years, we're going to be seeing a lot of consequences from all of that.
So let's talk about this sort of the three different areas, I suppose, that I'm aware of, and I'm sure you can correct me if I'm wrong, but as you say, there's sort of the back, the lower back, the knee, and shin splints and around the shins. What's your approach with assessing the problems and dealing with it?
So obviously everyone's individual issues, you know, everyone's an individual, everyone has their particular issues that might be causing it, and anyone that's got anything major obviously should be seeing a physio, but for most general injuries, you can sort of have the general recommendation of if there's pain in a certain area, it's most likely not coming exactly from that area, but it's coming from the muscles or the joints above and or below the joint. So for the knees, so the knee as a joint in itself is supposed to be incredibly stable, in the sense that aside from the normal flexing and extending, which you might do when you're kicking a ball or you're just walking, the knee doesn't really want a huge amount of movement through it, in all honesty. When you go below and above that, the ankles and the hips are the other joints. Those both want to be relatively mobile joints, in the sense that they want to be moved nice and freely. They don't want to have any restrictions, and they just want to do what they can. Due to demands of modern day, for a whole bunch of different reasons, the ankles and the hips just get super, super tight. And the issue there is when the body's walking or running or jumping or whatever you're doing, and it's trying to find movement through those joints, which should be free, and it can't, then allow more movement through the knee. So that'll cause a whole bunch of different issues, and that's probably a really, really leading cause of pain in that particular sense. So the way that I tend to assess that with my clients and people come to see me is just take them through a range of really, really simple movements and just have a look and say, hey, are your ankles actually, can you move them in a free range of motion? Can your hips move in a free range of motion? If not, more than likely you're going to be getting knee pain on the trail, or if you already have pain, it'll be causing you. Same thing for the lower back. Like, you can just move up above and below that joint. So you can say below there's the hips, which want to be free. If they're tight, that's probably contributing to that. And also the mid back or the upper back, if that's tight, that's probably contributing. So I mean, basically I just get people in and just take them through some simple stuff and just see, look, what's tight, what's weak, what's not working as it should. And then you can usually, you know, 90% of the time, if it's not a major injury and it's just a general aches and pains, you can usually see what's going on and what's causing it.
I should imagine it's probably equally split, isn't it, between people that have had some sort of sporting injury, sporting background, and those that have been desk bound for many years and have probably lost the flexibility.
Yeah, 100%. So people, you know, the majority of people coming out of sporting injuries, they'll have had a bit more of an acute issue back in the day. So whether it's an ACL tear, whether it's an ankle break or something like that. And they sort of, they're a little bit more aware than the general day-to-day people who just get bound up and tight and painful, because they've at least probably seen a physio or a podiatrist or whatever health professional they saw. So they, at least at one stage in their life, even if they completely ignore the advice, they sort of understand what's weak, what's tight, what might contribute to that. For the everyday person who just sits at a desk, it sort of just becomes that thing that you just accept. And, you know, you might have an achy lower back, and, you know, at first it's like, oh, my back's a little bit sore, but then it just becomes this thing where it's day to day, and you're like, well, that's just part of my life. And it just gets pushed to the back of your head, and you just ignore it because you don't know what to do with it. You don't want to add that extra stress in your life, and it just gets pushed away. Quite often in the gym, when we do have clients coming in and they have issues, and we spend a little bit of time, like usually in the first stages of at least myself training people, I just focus on fixing these issues that are causing discomfort, not so much pushing them, but just loosening up tight muscles and strengthening up weak ones and all the really basic stuff. But quite often people come and see me, they'll say, look, suffer from lower back pain. It's not that bad, but, you know, I just want to deal with it a little bit. We'll go through a few weeks of training and this and that. Then they'll be like, oh, wow, like not so much it's fixed, but now I'm so much aware that when it's not there, and when we do the movements and it loosens up and the pain's not there, like that's how I'm supposed to live, as opposed to just, you know, constantly aching, constantly tight, which I just ignore. So that eye-opening effect that, you know, they weren't really aware that it was a problem, aside from the, as we said, the sports people who probably do know what's causing it, but they just might not be doing anything to deal with it.
And I suppose we're, again, thinking about the next generation, the younger generation at the moment, spend all their time head down, shoulders hunched, looking at their phones and screens.
Oh, I was training a younger bloke the other day. He was about 15 years old, and I just did a few sessions with him to show him a little bit of very, very basic movements and strength training and stuff like that. And you can tell already, like, he spends at school, he's on the laptop all the time. So as you said, hunched over, comes home, plays PlayStation or Xbox or whatever, and is hunched over on the couch. And already, even at 15 years old, he was getting a nice hunch. And so I had to go to the mum. I was like, look, like, you know, this isn't, obviously you're never going to take away those things out of life, but you probably do need to look at getting like a particular chair for him to play PlayStation in, so he's not hunched over and thinking about something to do with school. Because, yeah, the next generation's going to be very, well, this generation's going to be very, very interesting. As I said, 10, 15 years down the line, when this stuff goes beyond just a young body that can deal with anything, to something that, yeah, might be a bit more serious.
When you sign up for the Outdoor Station newsletter, you have the option to give us feedback on our shows. You also have the opportunity to suggest people of interest you would like to hear more about. You can also suggest UK campsites which you feel may be unique, and cottage manufacturers who would appreciate a little exposure to our wider audience.
The Outdoor Station. Sharing the passion, appreciation and understanding for the outdoors world.
The Summit Success Method is a system, obviously, that you've developed over the years to service these sort of clients with these sort of problems. But for people that are listening that, you know, can agree that they've got a particular area where they've had injury, or they feel pain rather than had injury, are there any solutions they can do while they're out on the trail?
Yeah, 100%. So quite a big part of what I do with my service is just educate on a whole bunch of things around their training. And one thing that I really, really recommend people is just learning how to perform a little bit of maintenance on their muscles, in the sense that if you are out on the trail and things are getting achy, in the gym world, and I'm sure lots of people have heard, like, foam rolling is a really, really big thing, which is basically just getting a really, really soft implement, rubbing it over tight muscles, and for a whole bunch of technical reasons, it just feels good and releases muscles and makes it a little bit looser. And you can do exactly the same thing while you're on the trail. If muscles are getting achy or joints are getting achy, you can do a little bit of rolling out. So either with trekking poles, if you are using them, you can just get them and rub that into sore muscles. Or if you're not carrying them, even using your water bottle. So quite often I'll recommend to clients, if they do suffer from, so I'll use knee pain again as an example, and they wake up, say, on the second day of an overnight hike and they're really, really stiff and sore, they're just spending 5 minutes rolling out their calf and then rolling out their quad above. So as I said, above and below the pain, and just spending a little bit of time in that in the start of the morning can really, really alleviate a lot of that discomfort. And it's not going to fix the issue, but it can be really great. And you can do exactly the same thing on all other bits and pieces of your body. You can, you know, roll around on your foot if you've got a little bit of a sore foot and you know you deal with a bit of plantar fasciitis. I was talking to another trainer the other day and he's recommended finding nice round river stones and doing the same thing and just rubbing around on sore muscles. And there's so many other little bits and pieces you can just spend a bit of time just working out and kneading out those muscles. And it's essentially just giving yourself a self-massage. But if you do invest a little bit of time on it, it can really, really alleviate a lot of that discomfort that happens on the trail.
One term we often hear here when people are discussing their footwear or the potential purchase of footwear is they state they've got weak ankles. Now, they don't go into great details to describe what their particular version of weak ankles actually is. But is this something that you've had to deal with?
Yeah, so weak ankles is another really, really popular thing, common thing, sorry, that happens in the hiking and trekking world, just in the general population in itself. And weak ankles can mean a whole bunch of different things, but maybe 3/4 of the time it's basically happens is when you're younger, whether you're, you know, a teenager and playing sports or dancing or whatever, and you've just sprained your ankle a few times. And then really, really escalates if it's ever happened when you're younger, your ankles get into a really bad situation. So basically what happens is every single time you sprain or break your ankles, all the supporting structures around that ankle gets really, really mashed up and really, really pulled apart, and they get really, really weak. And anytime you sprain your ankle, at least in the exercise health world, is there's a very, very particular process of rehabbing that ankle. So not only alleviating the pain and getting yourself to that point, but also rebuilding those supportive structures in the ankle so it can get back to what it is beforehand. But 9 times out of 10, people who are not athletes, athletes are quite good at this if they've got someone hounding them, but general people in everyday life, as soon as the pain goes, they're like, sweet, I'm better, I'm perfect, I don't need to do anything. So they might have fixed the actual pain, but those structures never get repaired. And there's a really interesting statistic. I can't remember the exact numbers, but basically every single time you sprain your ankle, you're at an incredibly high risk of redoing it again. And so if you do it once, it's really bad, twice even worse, 3 times even worse. And I think once you get to 4 times or something, you know, you're more or less guaranteed an entire life of rolling your ankle, you know, 4 times a hike or something like that. And it's such a common thing. So quite often people will just accept that's a part of their life and they'll just ignore the fact. And you know, as you said, just say, hey, I have weak ankles. That's just something I do. But I'm of the big belief that as much as we might not be able to fix every single issue someone has 100%, at least we can do a little bit to help that. So I'm always a big advocate of people who do come in and say they have weak ankles or they've got a history of ankle sprains, of doing specific exercises to strengthen up those ankles. So you're not having to rely on strapping your ankles up when you're on the trail or rely on those high cut boots, which may or may not work, or just really, really trying to rebuild those structures. And I have my clientele, probably about 25% of them do have these issues. And we're working through doing things like specific strengthening exercises with bands, to specific foot strengthening exercises, to proprioception, which is balance exercises, and a whole bunch of different bits and pieces, which can just get those ankles back to where they should be and eliminate that factor of, hey, am I going to sprain this 3 times today or 3 times in this hike? And is that just going to suck away a huge amount of the enjoyment of what's going on? And it's such a common thing, but so many people just, again, tend to ignore it.
It sounds like a similar sort of exercises that you might do in yoga or Pilates. So the people that are actually perhaps doing that, will they be have more benefit?
Yeah, like yoga and Pilates are really, really great generalist approaches, in the sense that yoga is great for some general balance and general mobility, and also it's amazing for your general well-being and stress reduction and mental health. Pilates is very, very based around stability, so developing that sort of core stability, so your abdominal endurance, learning how to use the little bits and pieces muscles inside yourself. All these things are really, really broad subjects. So there's like so many different methods under the sun for Pilates and so many different methods under the sun for yoga. So some classes might bring some benefits to that. Some might not be, they might be working on other things. I'm of the big belief in, at least if you do have a particular issue, as I follow principles of what's called strength and conditioning, which is sort of doing your training for a very, very specific outcome. So as opposed to training in a generalist sense and hoping you're getting X, Y, and Z, which might happen or might not, is doing some very, very specific things to fix specific issues or to improve on certain areas. And I feel like that's a really, really beneficial way to train, because if you are, as in with anything in your life, if you are getting specific on something and you're really, really honing in, you're getting a lot more benefits as opposed to just doing a generalist approach. But as I said, I'm a big fan of both of them for particular reasons.
Do you have many female clients coming back to ankle damage that have suffered from turned ankles from wearing heels?
I do have a lot of female clients who have ankle issues, but most of them come from dancing or netball. Like netball, I don't know if netball is big over your side of the world, but it's absolutely huge down here. And it's the worst sport in the world for people's ankles. And every single Australian woman with ankle issues, or you know, 90% of them is coming out of a netball. It's ridiculous. So the high heels do cause issues further in life, but usually they've done the problems earlier, before they started wearing heels, or at least before they're wearing it day to day. And then the heels are just sort of adding to the problem as opposed to being the instigator, if that makes sense.
Moving further up the body from the ankles, then obviously knees are the one of the big areas, and as you say, lower back and hips. What are your thoughts on hiking poles? Because generally, the younger generation seem to think in sort of the Europe and the UK area that it's very much an old man's accessory. But anybody that's used them realise the difference. But certainly, what's your thoughts on them as an accessory?
I'm a massive fan of trekking poles and walking poles. Over down here, again, it's exactly the same. People are really, really resistant to using them. They think they're dorky or they're like, you know, unnecessary, or they're just an extra bit of kit, but they are so beneficial for a whole bunch of different reasons. Particularly for the knee, we'll start on is, as I said before, when you're walking downhill, your knee can take, I think I said something like up to 6 times more force, depending on the incline, a whole bunch of different variables. In a bunch of studies, there's been shown that if you are using trekking poles, it can take up to, on the downhill, it can take up to 30% of force off your knees. And that is a hugely, hugely significant number. And I've had quite a few clients in the past who, before we even get in the meat of the training, before we even strung a few weeks together to strengthen up, you know, their particular muscles and their joints and X, Y, and Z, just getting them using poles when they're walking immediately takes a lot of the discomfort away. And I say it's probably the closest thing to a magic pill you can find for your knee pain, and I'm a huge advocate for that. It also takes a whole bunch of pressure off your feet. So if you are suffering from plantar fasciitis or feet issues, it can be very beneficial for that. It can improve your movement efficiency when you're walking uphill. So basically, you're using less energy, you're getting your upper body doing some of the work so your legs don't get quite as fatigued. On the flat, it does burn a few more extra calories, which can be good for people if they're trying for weight loss, but it's probably not, it's nothing very, very major. But yeah, I'm an absolute huge fan of trekking poles. And if I could get every single one of my clients and every single hiker in the world using them, I would. But as you said, people are very, very resistant for a whole bunch of different reasons. But we'll keep on chipping away at people and hopefully we'll make a difference there.
Yeah, I think it's probably something in their psyche where they associate a trekking pole or hiking pole with a walking stick, and I think that's probably what's stuck in their minds. Now, the other thing that we're great advocates of over here is getting a rucksack to be fitted correctly. A lot of people, when they carry or when they actually lift a rucksack, they lift the rucksack by the shoulder straps and sling it on their back, as opposed to using the carry handle to lift it and place it. But also many people will take the weight on their shoulders rather than the weight on their hips. Is this something that you have to educate people with as well?
Yeah, a lot of people, as I said previously, a lot of people coming to see me, they haven't really done a huge amount of longer hiking in their time. Or at least for quite a while. So they'll be used to carrying day packs, but when they start carrying a heavier pack, they don't really know the ins and outs of that. So most people, and then there's also the issue of people buying gear online these days and they're not going into the stores to talk to professionals. So I always tell my clients when I first see them to 100% at least get your boots and your packs bought in a store. I have a few recommended stores, I say, around my local area because I know the staff in there are really, really good. And I say, look, go in there, get them fitted, because 100% you don't want to be messing around with that. If you don't know what you're doing, you're going to be so much more fatigued on the trail. And if your shoulders are getting uncomfortable and knackered and tired, you know, halfway through your hike, you're not going to be thinking about where to put your feet. You're not going to be thinking about, you know, what a beautiful surroundings around you. You're not going to be thinking about just how much of a good time you're having. You're going to be thinking about, oh, my neck's sore, my shoulders are sore. So I'm do put a lot of educational, well, a lot of pressure on my clients, to say the least, to get them fitted by a professional, because it's so worth it. And it's for such a simple thing, which isn't going to cost any money. It can significantly improve your enjoyment and your comfort on the trail.
Have you noticed over recent years then a greater increase in people who are getting more enthusiasm for bigger adventures, you know, taller challenges, harder hikes, that sort of thing?
I think so. I think that it's tough to say, because I always get people who are going to do them anyway. So, I get the regular stream of people coming in, but I think they are getting a lot more accessible, whether it is going up to climb the top of a mountain, or we've seen all the drama over in Everest recently, and or whether just flying overseas and doing a multi-day trek over New Zealand or something like that. And I think it is a lot more accessible to people because the gear is a lot, quite often a lot lighter. So you know, 20 years ago before my time, but I've seen pictures and heard stories of those heavy, heavy packs and heavy gear people had to lug around and really, really struggling with that. And also, you know, social media where everywhere you look, you're seeing these beautiful trails all around and those sort of bucket list goals, which we were talking about before, which, you know, before may have just sort of swam around people's heads and they didn't really have too many reminders day to day unless they specifically went looking for it. These days, if you once Google the, you know, Everest Base Camp into Google, it's going to find you again and again and again. And, you know, just psychologically, I think you're just hounded with it a bit more. And I do think there's a lot more upsurgence in, you know, I'm going to push this, I'm going to do these challenges, which I may have just considered before. And yeah, I think it's only going to go up and I think it's only become more popular.
Well, obviously, people listening to this in the UK and in Europe won't be able to pop over to see you as a potential client. So those people with various pains, as we've described, what would you suggest they should do? What was the best approach that they should take?
If someone does have, you know, specific pains and, you know, they are struggling with things day to day, like always the recommendation, first point of call is to go and see a physiotherapist. Purely for the fact that they're the experts in injury prevention and dealing with injury. A lot of people like to go to their GPs for these things, but as much as GPs are saying before, GPs are generalists, so they know a whole bunch of things and 100% they know about illness and everything. But when it comes to injuries and pain, they're probably not the best people to talk to, and quite often the recommendations are not probably the best things you could be doing. So I always say see a specialist. A lot of people beyond that who are looking for help with hiking and trekking and everything. When I first started out, it was just Sydney-based, but I was getting messages from people all around the world just wanting help because there's not a huge amount of people offering professional exercise advice for this particular population. So these days I do a lot of my work online, which is all, you know, very, very popular, and I enjoy that quite a bit because I'm reaching people in the US and the UK and New Zealand and all that. So yeah, that's another point of call if you're interested in that, obviously.
Oh, that's interesting. You're actually getting you're actually doing an online consultancy service.
Yeah, that's it. These days, again, with the advent of technology, things like that are very much more doable. So back in the day, or even like 5 years ago or 6 years ago, anyone who was doing anything online were these, I call them cookie cutter programs, which is basically just a PDF document saying, look, go out and do this exercise this day, this exercise another day, this exercise another day. And, you know, they'd sell them for $100 or £50 or something like that. And people go out and 9 times out of 10, they'd do a week or two and then forget about it. And that stuff, it's still around, but it wasn't very, very effective. But these days with, you know, the smartphones and everything, it's so much more easier to do a really, really personalized and comprehensive service from people remotely. So the way I do it personally is I sort of have a training app in which I talk to people on the phone, run them through a few video assessments and say, look, this is what we need to work for towards your adventure. Or as we're saying, if you have any issues, this might be X, Y, and Z, what's causing your issues after looking at your videos. And then I have a little app which I load all my exercises in, I load on training videos and everything like that. So people can literally just go on and say, look, today's Monday, I need to go do a strength session, or I need to go do a hike. This is exactly what I need to do, and this is a video for everything. And it's just so much easier and more accessible these days to do that. And it's so much, it's not, you know, even I have people in their 70s who've been using that who are completely technologically illiterate, but they've been able to do it. And I think these days it's a lot easier to put into place and do a really, really effective solution for people remotely.
Well, it's been fascinating to talk to you and touch base on a variety of these things, which I'm sure will be interesting to many people because, let's face it, as we get older, we all suffer from some pain from time to time. If you've listened to my podcast before, you know what my final question generally is, and I'm not sure if it's that appropriate really here, but I'll try it all the same. Of all the things I could have asked you about the work that you do and the services and the injuries that people get when trekking, what should I have asked you?
Ooh. Big question. I think probably what we should have covered is purely like why people physically prepare, in the sense that so many people will, on the internet these days, I've spent quite a bit of time on Facebook groups for hiking, and a lot of people tend to say, hey, how do I prepare for this adventure, this adventure, this adventure? And every single time, about 99% of the answers are, look, just go out and hike. You don't need to train. Hiking is the best way to train for hiking. And my argument against that is, yes, it can work for a lot of people, but if you do have any issues, so not just injuries, but if you sort of struggle going up hills, or if you're worried about your walking speed, or if you're don't really have enough time to go out hiking a couple of times a week, or if you're really, really just concerned about going out the trail by yourself all the time, all those, you know, all these situations, if you're just hiking, it's not a really great solution for people. So I always say, training these days, you can put a lot of very particular and specific work in your day-to-day life and in your week-to-week life, which is going to help you on the trail and help help you in particular situations and help prevent unfortunate circumstances. And you can do that while you're off the trail. And as much as you always need to spend time on the trail to you know, enjoy yourself and get ready for things, it doesn't have to be all the time. So I think that's something that, yeah, a point I really want to get across.
I think I agree with you, actually. The number of simple, really, really simple questions that people ask on different forums, saying, I'm going to do X for the first time. What do I need? What gear do I need? Or what training do I need to do? And of course, they get hundreds of replies. But I think, as you said in one of your previous posts, there are hundreds of replies from, you know, amateurs as opposed to registered professionals who actually might be able to give them a specific answer.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I try to poke my head in a lot of hiking forums here and there, and I try to give a professional input. Sometimes it lands, sometimes it doesn't, but I'm of the opinion that the mission I'm on at the moment is over the next 5, 10, 15, 30, 40 years, I really, really want to make a change in the adventure community and really, really bring the physical preparation and intelligent physical preparation to this community, and trying to raise the standards a little bit and get it out of this idea of, you know, hiking's just walking, to a sense that it is a challenge worth taking seriously, and it is something that you should be thinking about and preparing for properly. And so hopefully in the next decade or so, we'll make a bit of a dent in that that opinion.
I find that Googling aches and pains is a sure way to increase the worry and not solve the problem. So I can understand why Rowan is in demand. All his contact details are in the show notes, and I'm sure he would be interested in hearing from you if you feel you have the kind of physical problem we've discussed and need specific help. I know from experience that back pain, for example, can certainly ruin your outdoor plans, and you'll do anything to eliminate it, especially before a big or expensive trip. My thanks to Rowan for taking the time to join us. If you want to hear more about our podcasts, live streams, or suggest others for interview, just a quick reminder to please join the newsletter over on theoutdoorstation.co.uk. And of course, we're always interested in receiving emails directly from you. Until next time, folks, take care out there, and bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.